Hello and welcome from Tehran. You're tuned to the World News. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us to New York at this hour, where this year's UN General Assembly has kicked off at the United Nations headquarters there, with world leaders addressing global issues. UN Chief Antonio Guterres called a recent flood that's killed thousands in Libya a symbol of the world's ills. He described the flood's epicenter, Derna, a sad snapshot, of global inequity. Guterres also warned of a looming great fracture in the world, arguing that the existing global governance structures fail to serve a changing world. He called for sweeping changes to multilateral institutions, including reforming the UN Security Council and redesigning global financial systems. Also, Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva lamented increasing inequality in the world, calling for higher taxes on the rich. He complained of the world's 10 richest billionaires having more wealth than the poorest 40% of humanity. Well, Iraq has vowed that it will not allow any threat from its Kurdistan region to Iran based on a security agreement between the two countries. Iraqi Foreign Minister Fuad Hossein made the pledge during a meeting with his Iranian counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian. The meeting was held on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York. The two neighbors have reached an agreement to disarm and relocate anti-Iran terrorist groups operating in the Kurdistan region in northern Iraq. Baghdad says Kurdish armed groups along the border with Iran had handed over their heavy weaponry before the deadline for the deal, which is September the 19th. Iraq says the groups have been evacuated from the region and will be relocated to five camps in Kurdistan, far from Iran's border. Journalist and political analyst Julia Qasem has commented on the security deal between Iran and Iraq to disarm and relocate anti-Iran terrorists in Iraqi Kurdistan region.
Many people in Iraqi Kurdistan, I'd say the overwhelming majority, have the same objectives, want to see the same things as the Iranians in stabilizing their territory, preventing Mossad provocation inside their borders, using their countries as like a launching base for attacks, their territories. So I think that there's much more mutually beneficial aspects to this than there are differences. It's just that with the level of Mossad infiltration in some elements of the Kurdistani leadership has been the provocative factor for the attacks against Iran, the instability within Kurdistan too. But it's definitely the case that there will be this current and this tide that will try to prioritize that stability and root out those provocative fifth columnist elements within Iraqi Kurdistan.
Well, Iran's president calls on the United Nations to stop hegemonic powers from pursuing policies which are disruptive to global peace and stability. Ebrahim Raisi was speaking with the UN chief Antonio Guterres in New York. Raisi told Guterres that it's typical of hegemonic powers to instigate wars around the globe. He said he hopes the world body would prevent them from seeking excessive and imperialistic demands. The Iranian president underlined that fighting discrimination and poverty, as well as seeking sustainable security, are among the major responsibilities of the UN. He noted that the Islamic Republic is ready to help expand peace and security across the globe. Meanwhile, five Iranians have been released from U.S. detention following a prisoner exchange agreement between Tehran and Washington. Two of the released Iranians arrived in Tehran on Monday night and were reunited with their families. Mehdi Abbasian brings us more.
Two of the five Iranian prisoners freed from the U.S. landed in Tehran's Mehrabad airport on Monday. Their release was part of a prisoner swap deal between Tehran and Washington.
Iranians who have been detained in the U.S. have now returned to their country and will reunite with their family members.
It was all hugs and embraces, marking the end of a very long wait for their family members, who were delighted to once again see their loved ones. Mehrdad Moin Ansari and Reza Sarhangpour were both excited to be back in Iran. They also said they've had a tough time during their arrest in the U.S.
I'm very happy to see my family. I can't wait to see my family after 800 days. It was a terrible time that I was separated from my family for no reason.
I'm very happy that after 4 years, I finally came back to my beloved country and I could see my family. And it was a very tough experience for me, being away from my wife, my daughter, my father, my mom, my sister. And I had a terrible experience outside, but God, from the beginning, God was always helping me to pass this ordeal.
The freed Iranians also said that Washington has been pressuring them to accept their accusations while they were innocent.
The reason that was presented to me was something that it was like non-realistic. For example, they told me that you had intention to break the sanction and damage the society of the United States, or doing something that is not legal in the United States. I never did anything wrong, either in Iran, in United States, or elsewhere. And what they said was not true.
They were accusing me that I have moved the shipment from United States to Dubai. I mean, they were talking about the shipment that never happened by me. And they were forcing me to sign for the deal that they made for me, and they were forcing me to sign for it, and they were telling me that if you sign, we'll let you go home tomorrow. But they couldn't force me, so I didn't sign, and I was there for 4 years, and at the end...
Why didn't you sign?
To be honest with you, what they were saying, it was not true. So they were telling me to sign for the thing that I didn't do.
Meanwhile, the Deputy Foreign Minister for Consular, Parliamentary and Iranian Expatriates Affairs at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs said the release of the Iranian prisoners is the result of successful efforts by Tehran's diplomatic apparatus aimed at protecting the rights of Iranians across the globe.
We are very happy to see the return of our compatriots. This was the result of the efforts made by the Iranian government to uphold the rights of Iranian citizens across the world. The Iranian government is determined and dedicated to doing so. During the last 2 years, we have managed to bring back nearly 940 Iranian citizens held in prisons across the world.
The three other released Iranians are not returning to Iran, with two staying in the U.S. and one going to a third country to join his family. Tehran has time and again said that the prisoner exchange agreement is purely a humanitarian action and has nothing to do with other unresolved issues between Iran and the U.S. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Well, we've spoken to Masoud Shajari, the chairman of Islamic Human Rights Commission in London. He says Iran's accepting the prisoner swap is in line with his commitments to protecting its citizens across the world.
Well, this is significant. It's very important. And it's actually in line with what Iran has committed itself to its citizens since the beginning of the revolution. Prior to that, there wasn't really much interest in the protecting the citizens of Iran. But now we have seen since the revolution that has been one of the main commitments of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And the fact that this sort of exchange is taking place at a time when there is very little communication, no direct communication, it actually means that there is a very sophisticated sort of negotiation behind the scene indirectly, which resulted in this. And I think it really is good, because it's good for sort of those who have found themselves unjustly imprisoned in the United States. It's good to stop the sort of illegal and barbaric actions of United States in putting those sanctions on Iran and creating something which is a sort of a law of jungle, and enforcing and bullying the international community it sort of shows that despite what the U.S. thinks, still it could be held accountable.
South Korea confirms a transfer of unblocked Iranian assets to a third country. The assets had been frozen in South Korea due to unilateral U.S. anti-Iran sanctions.
The Iranian funds that had been frozen in South Korea due to financial sanctions on Iran have been recently transferred to a third country successfully under close coordination among the involved countries. Our government expects the South Korea-Iran relations to further develop on the occasion of the transfer of the frozen funds. All of the detailed matters on the transfer of the frozen funds were decided based on the agreements between relevant nations, including Iran.
South Korea's confirmation comes a day after the Iranian Foreign Ministry announced that some $6 billion of Iranian assets are accessible to Iran's central bank. The ministry added that the funds will be spent based on Iran's needs and priorities. It also denounced as illegal and inhumane Washington's measures to prevent Iran from access to its financial resources in other countries. The Iranian funds had remained blocked in two South Korean banks since 2018. Well, tensions are flaring up once again in the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region, raising concerns of a potential new war between Azerbaijan and Armenia. Azerbaijan says it has started a, quote, anti-terrorist operation in the Armenian-controlled region using high-precision weapons that, hours after Baku, reported two separate mine blasts in Karabakh that left six people dead, including Azerbaijan's interior ministry staff. Baku has blamed the blasts on what it calls illegal Armenian armed groups. Meantime, Armenia has urged Russian peacekeeping troops to stop what it has described as Azerbaijan's full-scale aggression against the local population. The EU has also condemned the military escalation, calling on Azerbaijan to stop its military operations. Two civilians have been reportedly killed and 23 injured in the attacks. The Nagorno-Karabakh region is populated mainly by Armenians, but is an internationally recognized part of Azerbaijan. It has been the site of a long-standing conflict between the two states. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has condemned Israeli settlers' incursions into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound under the protection of the regime's forces. The OIC said that Israelis' almost daily incursions into Al-Aqsa are a clear violation of the Geneva Convention and international law. The organization also called on the international community to hold Israel accountable and to put an end to the regime's atrocities across the occupied territories. On Sunday, Israeli settlers backed by troops stormed Al-Aqsa once again, provoking Palestinians' anger. Palestinian resistance groups have warned that Al-Aqsa Mosque is their red line, and any aggression against it will face a strong response. The World Bank says that one-fourth of Palestinians live below the poverty line in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Now, the conditions are worse for those in the Gaza Strip, where more than 2 million Palestinians continue to live under Israeli blockade. Ashraf Shannon brings us more.
Palestinians keep descending further into poverty and de-development under the Israeli occupation. In a report released on Monday, the World Bank said poverty rates are stubbornly high, as roughly one out of four Palestinians live below the poverty line. Palestinian non-governmental organizations say the poverty is more severe in Gaza.
In Gaza, the situation is more and more catastrophic comparing to the West Bank. Due to the blockade imposed for the 16 years, we have high deterioration on the humanitarian conditions. Also on the economic standards, due to this blockade, we have food insecurity.
They say that the Israeli occupation and blockade are the main culprits behind the increase in poverty among Palestinians. Press TV visited the Abu Ajwa family in Gaza's Zeitoun neighborhood, where more than a dozen people reside. Their average daily income is only around $5 a day. The abject poverty has forced them to live in miserable conditions.
Look at my house. It is falling apart and we can't afford to fix it. You can't even imagine how hard it is for me or for my family or living conditions in those of many families here are disastrous. We can hardly afford to put food on the table. Poverty has taken its toll on us, and I don't see any improvement to our situation anytime soon.
The situation of the Abu Ajwa family is just a small example of how thousands of people live in the tiny territory. Most Gazans are impoverished and rely on handouts to survive as their incomes continue to dwindle. More than 2 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have been living under intensified access restrictions since 2007 and are largely isolated from the outside world.
The people who are in need for humanitarian assistance, 80% of the population, and most of them children, women, elders, who are in bad need for such assistance on time we are suffering from shortage of funding for humanitarian aid. This will lead for more deterioration in the humanitarian and socio-economic situation.
Daily life is a constant struggle for most Gazans because of the inhumane Israeli practices.
According to experts, the Israeli regime is responsible for the high poverty rate and the near collapse of Palestine's economy, as well as its isolation from the rest of the world. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
And with that brings us to the end of this Worldness edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Mass shooter incidents have surged in the United States of America over the last decade. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Guardian wrote, schools in the United States of America are suffering an alarming rise in shootings, according to new federal data that shows the number of incidents reaching a historic peak for the second year running. Data compiled by the National Center for Education Statistics, NCES, records that in 2021 to 2022, public and private schools, spanning both elementary and secondary levels, incurred a total of 327 shootings, a record high. The incidents involved a gun being brandished and fired or a bullet hitting a school property. Of the 327 events chronicled by NCES, a part of its annual crime and safety report, 188 ended with casualties. And of those, some, 57, caused deaths. The rash of shootings amounts to a doubling of incidents on the year before, which was itself higher than any year since records began 25 years ago. In 2020 to 2021, covering the start of the pandemic, there were a total of 146 school shootings, 93 of which caused casualties, including 43 with deaths. The number of shootings that led to no death or injuries also showed a startling increase. In 2021 to 2022, there were 139 shootings without casualties, more than double the 53 registered the year before. The rise in recorded shootings is so dramatic between the two most recent years for which figures have been compiled that the NCES warns that the data should be interpreted with caution. Yet the data is likely to heighten concern about the safety of American schools and intensify calls for more rigorous gun controls. The NCES report shows that public schools across the United States have already ramped up extraordinary security measures over the past decade. Some 97% of schools now control access to their premises, 91% use security cameras, and 65% have security staff present at least one day a week. The proportion of schools that provide mental health assessments to evaluate students for mental health disorders has also risen to more than half. Sarah Bird Sharps of the gun control advocacy group Every Town for Gun Safety said in a statement that the new figures were distressing. She said, "The threat of gun violence at our schools and in our communities has become a constant in our children's lives, yet school shootings are not inevitable. They are the result of years of policy inaction." The new federal report stops short of providing figures for 2022 to 2023, the year in which the mass shooting in Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, left 19 students and two teachers dead. Though the latest incidents have yet to be processed by the federal agency, shootings continue to occur in schools with troubling frequency. Recently, a student was killed and two others injured at St. Helena High School in Greenburg, Louisiana, after an active shooter opened fire. The report gives granular detail on the types of shooters involved and the situations in which the incidents occur. Almost all shooters were male, and by far the largest proportion of them were minors. More than 70% of active shooters were aged 12 to 18. The most common scenario was an escalation of a dispute. According for 28% of the shootings lodged in 2021 to 2022. Drive-by shootings amounted to 12%. Illegal activity 9%. Accidental firing of a weapon 5%. And intentional property damage also 5%. According to an Axios report in March 2023, the U.S. has surpassed 100 mass shootings in 2023, according to the Gun Violence Archive, GVA, which defines mass shootings as situations in which at least four people are shot and either injured or killed, not including the shooter. Only 64 days have passed so far this year, meaning there have been more mass shootings than days in the U.S. thus far. The 100th mass shooting of the year left three people, including a child, dead and another person injured in Bolingbroke, Illinois. The U.S. didn't exceed 100 mass shootings until March 19th in 2022 and March 2022 in 2023, according to GVA data. There were 53 mass shootings in January, 41 in February, and 11 in March, a total of 104 in March 2023. At least 7,537 people have also died as a result of different forms of gun violence in the U.S. this year. The U.S. didn't exceed 100 mass shootings until March 19th in 2022 and March 22 in 2021, according to GVA data. There were 647 mass shootings in 2022 and another 690 in 2021. Firearm-related injuries like homicide and suicide surpassed motor vehicle crashes as the leading cause of death for children and teenagers in 2020, according to an analysis of new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention data published last year. Since passing and signing into law the bipartisan gun safety bill in 2022, the most significant piece of federal gun legislation in nearly three decades, it's unlikely a divided Congress will pass a stricter gun laws.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
The general theme that we had been, that we've chosen and that was announced is how to live an Islamic life. And obviously now the challenge becomes is how do we live in this world? How do we live in this country, in this world, in this era, and deal with the life of this world, but at the same time, try to get to those ideals that are expected from us. You know, when you look in the Quran, Allah uses a term, He calls it Hayat al-Dunya, the life of this temporal world. And probably every time, from my recollection, that Allah uses the term Hayat al-Dunya, it's never in a positive way, right? We see in the Quran, Allah says, Bal tu'thiruna al-hayat al-dunya. But rather, you people prefer the life of this world, whereas the world to come is much better and it is everlasting. Many times Allah uses this term, actually about 30 times Hayat al-Dunya comes in the Quran, and they are always in a negative way. Not because this world is evil or negative or has no goodness to it. No, there is goodness in this world. But the goal of life is not to live in this world. It is to use the world to get to the world to come. And so even Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salatu wassalam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, he would say in a hadith that this world is the planting ground for the world to come. Just as you see farmers will plant their crops in spring, they'll put the seed in the ground, they will nurture the seed, they will do all they can that everybody is in search of or running after. Some people are in search of this world at a higher level or with more fervor and zeal than others. But he says this life of ours is limited to six different things. He says it is something which is eaten, it is something which is drunk, it is something which is worn, It is something which is ridden upon. It is something which is entered into matrimony. And it is something which is smelt. So he says this world is six things. What you eat, what you drink, what you wear, what you ride, what you engage in through marriage, and what you smell. And then the commander of the faithful in this hadith, he goes on to explain what these six things are. He says the finest of food, that which is eaten. I know many of you might like your kebabs and your biryani and your samosas and all of these foods and your hamburgers and pizzas. But Amirul Mu'mineen says the best of food in this world is honey. And he says, what is honey other than the spit of a bee? You go and study how the honeybees make honey. And it's literally that they're going on different flowers and plants. And they go to the beehive and their honeycomb is created. And it's literally the regurgitation of the honeybee. And you know there is honey out there in the market today. A small bottle sells for $1,200, $1,500 for a small bottle of honey. This special one that comes from New Zealand. Right? And Imam Ali says this is the best of food. And this is what people are running after. And then he says, what is the best of drinks? Right? He says the best of drinks is water. And he says water is something that everybody makes use of. The good people, the righteous, and the evil. The pious and the sinners, we all drink water. That's the life of our lives. You might not have your soft drinks and your smoothies and your cappuccinos, and even all of those have to be created from water. So he says that the best of drinks is water, and this is available to everyone. It's nothing special, but it's something we all go after. He then says the third thing, which was what we wear, he says the best of clothing is silk. And silk, he says, is nothing but the excrement of the silkworm. You look at the price of silk, of pure silk, that is. As we know, for men, it's haram to wear silk, so don't go out and buy anything made out of silk, because for men, this is haram completely, just as gold is haram for men to wear in this world, a ring, a watch, a necklace, a bracelet, earrings. Now I see, mashallah, brothers are getting their ears pierced. Well, it's haram to wear gold, and it's haram for men to wear silk. This is only for women. In Jannah, inshallah, we'll have that. But in this world, men are not allowed silk or gold. But Imam Ali says the best of clothing is made out of silk, and this is the excrement of a worm. And you can look at the process of silkworms and the cost of how much it is. But he says this is something that people run after, that this is a worldly desire that people have. The fourth thing he says is that what the best thing to ride is a horse. And I know some public people were thinking the best ride is a Tesla. Or the best ride is your new EV, right? Your whatever it is. Or a Merc or a BMW. But no, he says the best ride is a horse. Speaking about 14 centuries ago. And he says it's on horses that men kill one another. Right? People, and even till today, you look at these Saudi kingdoms and all the Arab kingdoms. And they take pride in their multi-million dollar horses that they have. And he says the best of animals is the same one that you and I fight and have wars and we kill one another upon. And then he says of the fifth of this world, what is the life of this dunya? He says it's that pleasure that you get out of matrimony, of a man and a woman getting married. And he says that this is one sexual organ entering into another. But yet people derive pleasure from this action. So he's showing us this world is so simplistic, but yet people run after it. People fight over it. People kill over it. And then last, he says that the thing that people value the most in terms of what we smell is musk, perfume. And he says that musk is nothing except a gland in a deer. You know, if you look at traditional perfumes, it wasn't CK and, you know, all these other brands of perfume, it was musk. And it's even till today, musk is used to make the high quality perfumes. Now they have synthetic musk, but high quality, expensive perfumes that you spend thousands of dollars upon. They actually use the gland of a deer, an animal. And historical references tell us this musk from the deer used to be worth double or triple the price of gold. And he says this is what people covet to smell good, is this gland from an animal. Meaning that if you look at all of this, that this is what the world is all about. Right? It's what you eat. And that's why you and I see all these TV shows, Master Chef, and all of these competitions to create the best dish of food. It's what people are driving, it's what people are eating, what people are watching. Right? It's all about the dunya, about the temporal material world that offers no benefit or very little benefit to us in this life, and obviously very little if we look at it from a very superficial perspective in the world to come. So coming back and trying to conclude this discussion for tonight is, how do you and I achieve that true life? Right, that verse I mentioned from chapter number 8. Istajibu lillahi wa lirasuli idha da'akum lima yuhyikum. How do we attain that life that Allah says, answer the call of Allah and His Messenger when they call you to that which gives you true life, that pure life that will not only carry us in this temporary world, but that will allow us to make it to the world to come. Well, number one is, as the verse says, istajibu lillahi wa lirasul. We have to answer the call of Allah and the Messenger. And answering the call of Allah and the Messenger is perhaps one of the greatest challenges, because it involves us reading the words of Allah. It involves us reading the verse of the hadith of the Prophet and his noble family. It means we have to think about what we're reading, that we don't just become attached to the religion at an emotional level.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyumun Rauf Saburun Majid. صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
In the United States, Special Counsel Jack Smith has asked the federal judge overseeing the case against Donald Trump for his alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 election to limit what the former president can say publicly about the case. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Special Counsel Jack Smith has asked the federal judge overseeing the case against Donald Trump for his alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 election to limit what the former president can say publicly about the case, accusing him of making inflammatory public statements aimed at influencing potential jurors and intimidating witnesses. In a 24-page court filing on Friday, 15th of September, Special Counsel Jack Smith and his prosecutors list a litany of posts by Donald Trump on his Truth Social platform since his indictment in the case in August. They say the former president has spread disparaging and inflammatory public posts on Truth Social on a near-daily basis regarding the citizens of the District of Columbia, the court, prosecutors and prospective witnesses. They allege that Trump knows he inspires others to penetrate threats and harassment against his targets. The government lawyers asked Judge Tanya Chutkan to impose a narrowly tailored order that would bar Donald Trump from making extrajudicial statements that present a serious and substantial danger of materially prejudicing the case. The defendant's repeated post that he cannot receive a fair trial from this court or from a jury of his peers in this district are substantially likely to undermine confidence in the justice system, affect the jury pool, or otherwise prejudice the due administration of justice, prosecutors wrote. His misleading statements regarding the special counsel's office and its investigation are designed to do the same, and his targeting of specific witnesses seeks to either bolster or impeach witnesses, not before this court, but instead in the court of public opinion before trial begins. The government proposed an order restricting statements regarding the identity, testimony, or credibility of prospective witnesses, and also statements about any party, any witness, attorney, or court personnel, or potential jurors that are disparaging and inflammatory or intimidating. Its court filing also said that such an order would not be intended to prohibit quotation or reference to public court records of the case or Donald Trump's proclamations of innocence. Government lawyers argued that Donald Trump has an established practice of issuing inflammatory public statements targeting at individuals or institutions that present an obstacle or challenge to him. They said that after the 2020 election, Trump focused on the election system and on election officials and others tasked with carrying out civic duties to implement fair elections. The government noted that those who were named by Donald Trump in his tweets were subject to threats and harassment. The court filing cited a few examples of this, noting that one individual told the House Select Committee that investigated the Capitol riot, "After the president tweeted at me by name, calling me out the way that he did, the threats became much more specific, much more graphic, and included not just me by name, but included members of my family by name, their ages, our address, pictures of our home, just every bit of detail that you could imagine. That was what changed with that tweet." The Trump campaign in a statement said the Department of Justice is corruptly and cynically continuing to attempt to deprive President Trump of his First Amendment rights. This is nothing more than blatant election interference because President Trump is by far the leading candidate in this race, the Trump campaign argued. The American people, the voters, see right through this unconstitutional charade and will send President Trump back to the White House. The government redacted the official's name in the court filing, but that quote came from the 6th of January House Select Committee testimony of former Philadelphia City Commissioner Al Schmidt in June of 2022. Donald Trump responded to the special counsel's request of the court on Truth Social platform. Trump said, "So I'm campaigning for president against an incompetent person who has weaponized the Department of Justice and FBI to go after his political opponent, and I'm not allowed to comment. They leak, they lie, they sue, and they won't allow me to speak. How else would I explain that Jack Smith is deranged or crooked Joe Biden is incompetent?" Donald Trump was indicted by a federal grand jury on 4 charges relating to his alleged attempts to reverse the 2020 election results and has pleaded not guilty. CNN cable news network has also covered the same story. Justice Department prosecutors want U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan to reel in Donald Trump's public statements in the federal 2020 election interference case against him, asking her to place a court order limiting what Donald Trump can say, according to a newly released court filing. The request for a limited gag order filed in recent days represents the most direct response from prosecutors with Special Counsel Jack Smith's office to the former president's public statements to date. The Justice Department said the order is needed to protect the integrity of his trial in March. Donald Trump has already been ordered not to intimidate potential witnesses or talk to them about the facts of this case. In making their argument, prosecutors pointed to false public statements that Donald Trump previously made around the 2020 vote to erode public faith in the administration of the election and intimidate individuals who refuted his lies. The defendant is now attempting to do the same thing in this criminal case to undermine confidence in a criminal justice system and prejudice the jury pool through disparaging remarks and inflammatory attacks on the citizens of this district. The court, the prosecutors, and prospective witnesses, prosecutors wrote in their court filing. U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, an Obama appointee overseeing the criminal case in Washington, D.C., hasn't yet made a decision on the request. Trump blasted the special counsel's motion in a Truth Social post on Friday, calling Smith deranged and claiming that it was a move to silence the leading Republican candidate who could challenge President Joe Biden in the 2024 election. The former president doubled down on his attacks at an event in Washington, D.C. on Friday evening, 15th of September, accusing the special counsel of infringing on his rights. "Did you see today that deranged Jack Smith wants to take away my rights under the First Amendment, wants to take away my rights of speaking freely and openly, Donald Trump wrote. The prosecutor specifically asked for a court order limiting Trump's ability to speak out the identity, testimony, or credibility of prospective witnesses, and statements about any party, any witness, any attorney, court personnel, or potential jurors that are disparaging and inflammatory or intimidating. The court filing federal prosecutor cited Trump's recent criticism of former Vice President Mike Pence and Bill Barr, the former Attorney General under Trump, both of whom could be called as witnesses in the trial next year. Prosecutors also noted that Trump's previous social media posts against Chutkan, calling her a Trump-hating judge. Donald Trump, they noted, has called the special counsel prosecutors a team of thugs and has attacked Smith as deranged.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghodde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this episode, we invite you to listen to the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with the Supreme Assembly of Commanders and Officials of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, on August 17, 2023. In the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya. Today, we have reached a point where young people are moving and attacking in the occupied territories of Palestine and in the area west of the Jordan River in such a way that they are crippling the Zionist regime. This is how the revolution is. In this manner, the formation of the enmities is inevitable. Very well, I would like to mention one last thing. We have advanced in many years. A lot of good work has been done. Our capabilities are increasing every day. As the honorable commander of the IRGC mentioned some good things about our capabilities. We have all of these things, and there may be many other things that naturally have not been included in the reports. But I would like to advise you to refrain from feeling too proud of your capabilities and accomplishments. Be careful you don't become arrogant because of these things we have. We should appreciate them and understand their importance. But we should also note that the enemy's strategic policy of creating successive crises, which was approved by the Gottlob Conference, is still ongoing.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
They have not abandoned this policy. They keep creating crises outside the system of the Islamic Republic, inside of their country. One day they do this under the pretext of elections, another day under the pretext of gas prices, another day under the pretext of women's issues, and so on. They create crises under various pretexts. Obviously, the tools they use to create crises are more advanced today. The enemy's primary goal for creating these crises is to destroy the country's security. If there is no security, there will be no economy either. If there is no security, there will be no science, universities, or research centers. If there is no security, there will be no employment or work to build infrastructure either. If there is no security, there will be no reopening of closed factories. Security is the main thing. The goal of these crises is to disrupt the country's security. We need to know this as a fact and to identify our duty with respect to this.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
the supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of